Do not invade Ukraine, the U.S. president has warned Russia and threatened further sanctions. But Joe Biden's virtual summit with Vladimir Putin ended without a breakthrough. So did it do enough to prevent a new conflict in Europe? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Hazem Seeker. Fears are growing of a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine. Tens of thousands of its soldiers have amassed along Ukraine's border, along with Russian military hardware. U.S. intelligence agencies say a multi-front offensive could happen early next year. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden used a virtual meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin to issue a warning. Biden threatened more economic sanctions if Russia were to invade. Putin called NATO's presence in Ukraine a red line which threatened Russia's security. He asked for guarantees of no further NATO expansion eastward. We'll bring in our guests in a moment, but first this report from our White House correspondent, Kimberly Halkett.
With a massive buildup of Russian troops near Ukraine's shared border and U.S. intelligence indicating an invasion of Ukraine could happen early next year, U.S. President Biden met virtually with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Good to see you again.
The pair spoke for 2 hours. Putin denies Russia intends to invade Ukraine, calling it fear-mongering. But the U.S. president made clear today that if Russia did, tough economic sanctions would follow.
I will look you in the eye and tell you, as President Biden looked President Putin in the eye and told him today, that things we did not do in 2014, we are prepared to do now.
That reference is to the Russian annexation of Crimea from Ukraine that prompted U.S. sanctions. Biden also told Putin the U.S. was prepared to assist militarily.
We would provide additional defensive materiel to the Ukrainians above and beyond that which we are already providing. And we would fortify our NATO allies on the eastern flank.
For its part, Russia is seeking assurances from the West that Ukraine will not become a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, something the Ukrainians have pursued for years. The U.S. National Security Advisor reiterated Ukraine can associate with whomever it wants. But one analyst believes joining NATO is unrealistic.
It ought to be clearer to them that we're not coming to the rescue, so you're going to have to live with next to Russia without a U.S. security guarantee.
There were also questions about the controversial Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which runs from Germany to Russia, and whether it could be used as leverage in discussions over Ukraine. The White House says it will pressure the German government to stop it if Russia invades.
The Biden administration will continue to work with its European partners, promising a coordinated response should Russia ignore their warnings. President Biden will also speak with Ukraine's President Zelensky on Thursday. Kimberly Halkett, Al Jazeera, The White House.
Well, let's bring in our guest now to talk more about this. In Belgrade, we have Viktor Olivic, lead expert at the Center for Actual Politics. In Silver Spring, Maryland, Melinda Herring, deputy director at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. And joining us from Kiev, Oleksiy Haran, professor of comparative politics at Kiev Moylia Academy. A warm welcome to each of you. So, Melinda Herring, let me start with you then. No breakthroughs from this virtual meeting, but cards were laid out on the table from both sides. Or were they?
That's right. I think the word I would use is impasse. Some analysts are saying that the crisis has been resolved temporarily. I think that's flat out wrong. When you read the statements, when you parse the statements from the White House and from the Kremlin, you get very different portraits of what happened yesterday. We know that President Biden did three things. He said that the U.S. would impose strong economic measures in tandem with its allies if Russia were to invade Ukraine. The U.S. would send more defensive materiel, and the U.S. would fortify NATO allies on the eastern flank. It also looks like the U.S. will join the Minsk agreements. These are the stalled peace accords. The U.S. has not been party to these agreements, and I think Russia really wants the U.S. to join in. It would be an opportunity to revitalize these discussions. But when you read those statements, Moscow and the United States want very different things. The point that jumps out to me the most is that Moscow is saying they're engaging in whataboutism. They're blaming NATO and they're blaming Kiev for the aggression. They're not taking responsibility. This crisis is far from being resolved.
Viktor Olevich in Belgrade, I'm sure you want to respond to some of that, but I want to ask you as well, Russia has said that these fears about a Russian invasion are unfounded. If that's the case, what are President Putin's intentions over Ukraine then? What's behind the troop buildup near its border with Ukraine?
Well, a massive full-scale invasion of Ukraine is simply not in Russia's national interests. First of all, Russia does not really have the resources to maintain massive swaths of territory and people in Ukraine for any long period of time. Secondly, Russia is really not interested in massive new political and economic sanctions levied against it by the United States, by America's transatlantic allies and other partners around the world. The Russia's economy is not in a great shape as it is. A new economic threat of that magnitude is simply not, I would repeat, not in Russia's national interests. Thirdly, unlike Crimea, which has a predominantly ethnically Russian population and where people really were in support, they were supportive of Russia all along, unlike Crimea, most other territories of Ukraine are not as enthusiastic about the Russian state. So Russia would find more opposition there to its presence. All that being said, the Kremlin understands that full well. What Moscow is really concerned about is the increase in Western military presence in Ukraine, an increase in military cooperation between Ukraine and the United States on one hand and Ukraine and various European capitals on the other hand. Moscow is also concerned about the use of new military systems and technologies such as the Bayraktar drones that have been in use in Ukraine in recent months. Russia is also concerned that its policy towards Ukraine designed to get Ukraine in one form or another back into Russia's sphere of influence has not been working. So by making these tough moves and by toughening up its rhetoric, Moscow is trying to squeeze out concessions from the West, especially from the Biden White House. It is hoping that the Biden White House will give in at least on some points. Moscow understands full well that nobody is going to give it written guarantees that no new NATO members are going to be accepted. But Russia at least wants some concessions as far as the possible construction of military bases, American, British, or others on the territory of Ukraine. Russia sees that as a red line. Russia would like to limit military cooperation between Ukraine and its Western partners as a whole.
All right. We can get into some of that a little bit later, but I want to get a Ukrainian perspective on this now. This summit was generally seen as constructive by the United States and Russia. Ultimately, nothing was resolved, and Ukraine's fate still hangs in the balance. Oleksiy Harin, how are they likely to view this in Kiev?
Well, I think, first of all, there was a strong statement from the U.S. president, and this is very, very important. President and his advisors, they said about potential, and not only them, also the West is talking in general. You know, the U.S. and its European partners, they are saying now together that there would be increased economic sanctions against Russia, and this is very, very important warning for Mr. Putin in all this talk. So basically that's what we would like to hear, because we are really afraid of Russian aggression. Again, I would like to remind to your viewers that in 2014, nobody expected Russian attack, because Ukraine at that time was non-allied state. And we were hoping, we would never imagine that Putin would annex Crimea, start the war in Donbas, and then actually annex Azov Sea, so he violates the freedom of navigation there. So nobody expected that Putin will send its troops to Ukraine, regular troops. But it happened. It happened without any NATO involved. So Putin attacked non-allied and basically neutral Ukraine. So that's why now definitely we have fears. And I would like to stress one again that at this point there are no military, no NATO military bases here, no NATO soldiers, no NATO missiles. So basically there's no threat to Russia. But Putin is trying to undermine Ukraine, to destabilize Ukraine, to split European allies from the United States. And that's what we are afraid of. So we hope it won't happen. And basically President Biden sent a good signal.
Melinda Herring, it was mentioned there in our report from Kimberly Halkett about economic sanctions, and you mentioned some of that as well. One of the things that was mentioned was this Nord Stream 2 pipeline that's running between Russia and Germany, and that could be used as leverage. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, certainly made mention of that. He said it's leverage for the West because if Vladimir Putin wants to see gas flow through that pipeline, he may not want to take the risk of invading Ukraine. If things were to come to that, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline would be suspended, wouldn't it? What I mean, is that something that's obviously worked into the U.S. calculations on this, hasn't it? And just respond to that if you can.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Nord Stream 2 is definitely on the table. There's a couple of different options. When you read the Sullivan statement, he refuses to go into what was actually discussed. But we know that the Germans will cancel Nord Stream 2 if Russia does invade. The statement that came out was very interesting. It says over and over again that the U.S. and its allies are willing to consider options that they have not considered before. So that probably means sanctions against big Russian state banks and investment agencies. It probably means a broadening of sanctions to maybe potentially areas like mining, metals, and shipping, and state-owned companies could be in there. And then it could possibly mean cutting off access to the SWIFT banking system. And that's sort of the nuclear option. Nord Stream 2, though, is a big deal, and it's one that was definitely discussed yesterday. According to the Ukrainians, there are 94,300 Russian troops near Ukraine's border, and they're in the northeast, they're in the east, and they're in Crimea. And we saw on Friday, U.S. intelligence declassified some estimates, and we think the U.S. Government thinks that Russia will increase its troop numbers to 175,000, and that an invasion could come as likely as January 2020. I disagree with Victor. Victor made a quite powerful case that invading Ukraine is not in Russia's national interest. Well, I think that there's a case to be made that it's serious this time. Victor's right. We don't know if Putin has made up his mind. This may be an elaborate ruse. He may be putting huge pressure on Ukraine and the United States to give in at the negotiating table. That's entirely possible. But Vladimir Putin may be thinking about this decision in a different way. He may decide that the benefits outweigh the costs, and he may invade. And this time, if he does, it will be different than it was in 2014 and 2015. He would use Russian soldiers. They would be in Russian regalia, and he'd use the Russian Air Force. So I see four reasons why Putin might go in. First is that Putin is an aging autocrat, and he's thinking about his legacy. And seizing Ukraine could bolster his image as a great leader. When you look at the rhetoric coming out of the Kremlin, they're talking about Stalin and Ivan the Great. That's how he thinks of himself. And he to be a great Russian leader means to take territory. Second, I think Putin looks at the map of the world and he sees an opportunity. 2021 was a really good year for him. Gas prices are up. There's no one to stop him. He sees weakness everywhere, and this is his chance to take Ukraine if he wants to.
Let's put some of that back to Victor then in Belgrade. I mean, Putin has made no secret of the fact, hasn't he, that he's always seen this is a historical wrong that Ukraine became an independent state back in 1991 with the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that Ukraine must be, in his mind, if not part of the Russian state, then part of Russia's sphere of influence, and that this is a manufactured crisis that has been entirely engineered by Vladimir Putin. What do you say to that?
Well, Putin may believe that, but we have seen that throughout the last two decades of his rule, Russia has not been able to change the calculus, the geopolitical calculus, the geopolitical balance in Ukraine in its favor. So in 2000, just a brief go back to history, 2004, the first Ukrainian Maidan, when Russia was interested in one outcome and Western states were interested in another outcome of the election, at that presidential elections at that time, and Russia was unable to sustain its to get its candidate elected. Yushchenko, who was a more pro-Western candidate, won 10 years later. So Russia had 10 years to do something about that situation. And yet in 2014, when a new crisis emerged with Western powers being on one side of the equation and Russia on the other, Russia again lost Ukraine. And it was in reaction to that loss, in reaction to the fact of Yanukovych, who was Ukrainian president at that time, being deposed and replaced by a more pro-Western government. It was in response to that Russia annexed Crimea, because Russia, in a way, justifiably believed that had it not taken those steps in Crimea, the Black Sea Fleet, that is so central and so strategic to Russia's military plans in the Black Sea area, would have been asked to leave. And then Russia feared that Western navies would be invited to be based there. So for Russia, it was a way, knowing that it had lost Ukraine in 2014, it was a way to at least save Crimea as a host of its Black Sea Fleet, and also to save face in Moscow itself. Because had Russia abandoned Crimea, it would have a serious domestic fallout, both among Putin's loyalists in Russia and in Russia's military ranks, which see Crimea as a strategic outpost. So after 2014, 7 years have passed, and Russia, despite all of its efforts, has not been able to change the calculus, change the equation in its favor in Ukraine. Ukraine is getting closer and closer to the West. So these acts, like what we saw in April, which was a similar situation when the Western intelligence sources reported that Russian troops were amassing along Ukraine's borders, were sounding alarms, and nothing happened after the Geneva talks between Biden and Putin in Switzerland.
All right.
So Putin is using these pressure points to get some concessions. He's not interested in a full-scale war in Ukraine, which would be catastrophic for Russia.
Let's put some of that to Oleksiy Harin then. Russia lost Ukraine in 2014. Your response to that?
Yes, Russia lost Ukraine. Why? Because Putin attacked neutral Ukraine. Before 2014, majority of Ukrainians believed in our friendship and partnership with Russia. Supporters of NATO were in minority. Putin decides to annex Crimea. That's what happened basically. It could be compared to what Saddam Hussein did. Saddam Hussein said, Kuwait is ours. Putin was saying, you know, Crimea is ours, so I have the right to annex it. By the way, despite the fact that there is Crimean Tatars who are natives, Muslim natives to Crimea, but their views were totally ignored by Russia. So yes, as a result of Russia's actions, Putin lost Ukraine. That's true. What we are afraid of now is not only large military offensive, we also afraid of a so-called limited military offensive, because Putin may try to seize one or two strategically important cities in eastern Ukraine, like he did in February 2015, when despite the ceasefire, despite all the promises which Russia did to its western partners, Russia continued by regular troops and seized the
If I could just jump in here for a moment, Alexei, what kind of assistance would you be wanting from the United States and the West, if it's not in the form of, I mean, if Russia were to invade Ukraine, as you believe, if it's not in the form direct military assistance in the form of troops, because Ukraine is not a NATO member, what other assistance would you expect?
Well, I think that the economic sanctions, increased economic sanctions, which should be applied not only in case of large military offensive, but also if Putin would start a limited military offensive, they should also be applied. And we need defensive weapons. We need defensive weapons. So, and help also to reform the Ukrainian army. So that's important. It's a long time strategy for us. Yes, we understand that NATO is not going to fight for us, but support of the armaments and the increased economic supply of the armaments and increased economic sanctions, that would be good. Very important. And finally, I would like to stress again, there is no freedom of navigation. Ukrainian ships cannot move to the Azov Sea, which is shared sea with Russia. And there is a Russian-Ukrainian treaty on that, but Russia violates it as well. So Ukrainian ships, they may not enter the Azov Sea, you know. So I think it should be unblocked as well.
All right, Melinda, if I could turn back to you on this. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just going to say, I agree with Alexei, but that's not strong enough. I don't think that the package that President Biden laid out yesterday, you know, we're not privy to all the details, but the details we're privy to, I don't think that's enough to deter Putin. I don't see why the United States isn't fortifying NATO allies on the eastern flank right now. There's no reason why we shouldn't be doing that. I think the United States, yesterday Sullivan said that we have a pipeline to the Ukrainians and we're sending weapons through that pipeline. Fabulous. But if these estimates are right and the Russians are considering an invasion, a partial invasion or a full invasion in January, February, once the weather permits it, once tanks can move more freely, we got to get stuff there now. And getting expensive weapon systems there now is difficult. There's a military theorist. His name is Dr. T.X. Hams, and he has some very interesting ideas. He says that Ukraine should be using autonomous drone storms. It should be thinking about IEDs and mines and lining the northern border to prevent an invasion and make it as difficult for Russia as possible and getting ready for a guerrilla warfare. He has a very interesting article on the Atlantic Council website that I would commend to your readers.
All right. Before we go, I think we've got about a minute or so left, and I'll give what's probably going to be the last word on this to you, Viktor Olevich, in Belgrade.
Well, look, the situation with the Falklands War in the early 1980s is very well known around the world, including in Russia, when Leopoldo Galtieri, an Argentine admiral who was the head of military dictator of Argentina at that time, decided to invade the Falklands in the hopes of raising his ratings in his falling ratings in Argentina. The result of that was not only the collapse, eventual collapse of the invasion of Falklands, but also Galtieri's fall in Argentina. That is also is well known in Russia, too. Russia understands that NATO, the United States, and its allies are not going to go head-to-head with Russian forces in Ukraine. But it also understands that the economic damage that new political and economic sanctions, massive sanctions by Europe, by the United States, by their partners around the world, would be catastrophic for Russia. This is not in Russia's national
interest. We're
going
to have to leave it there. Thanks very much to all three of you. We're out of time. Good to have you all with us. Viktor Olevich, Melinda Herring, and Alexei Haran. Thanks very much for being on Inside Story. And thank you, as always, for watching. Remember, you can see the program again anytime. Just go to our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. For me, Hazem Sika, and the whole team here, bye for now.